Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
From our comments page, please get Shelby Steele on the air. ASAP, Steele wrote the book, A Bound Man, Why We Are Excited About Obama and Why He Can't Win. You should video stream his interview and request that Mr. Steele wear a dunce cap during the segment. Charles in Fort Greene, you're on WNYC. Hello, Charles.
Yes, hello, Brian. Good morning to you. And you have to excuse my voice. I was in the middle of the insanity and chaos on the corner of DeKalb Avenue and Carlton last night, and I was yelling my head off, and it was absolutely an amazing experience. I have to say that I've lived in New York City all my life, Brooklyn, Fort Greene, since I was born, and I decided to just go out and watch the election results at a big screen down on Myrtle Avenue. When it was over, I walked outside to my car, heard yelling in all different directions, decided to take a drive down DeKalb Avenue, and the street at the corner of Carlton and DeKalb was completely congested. Nothing can get by. When people tried to drive through with their cars, the people would come outside, give you high fives out of the window of the car if you honked your horn. The audiences went wild, so I just decided to just pull a car over to the side and just walk around. I received a phone call from my girlfriend, who was actually in Kenya at the exact moment, and she's calling me and telling me that they're going nuts over there. I'm looking around at all of these people, and I must honestly say one of the things that I gathered from all of this was, I'm an African-American male. I've lived here all my life in Fort Greene, and I started to develop a little resentment after traveling around the world and coming back and seeing all the regentrification that was going on in Fort Greene, the high amounts of well-to-do white people that were moving into the area. And I started to develop a type of a bitterness. And last night, as I stood and watched all of these people, who I would say were probably 75% predominantly white, and the other people who were all together in this unity and this experience that I thought I would probably never see again, almost all, just of any resentment and bitterness and any confusion that I have about the regentrification of the neighborhood and the makeup and the change of the people coming in and the people that I grew up with not being able to afford to live there, moving out, and just seemed to disappear because I saw that these people actually stood up for something and were there to try to make some change. And anybody who was there in Fort Greene, I'm sure either they didn't go to work today or that they're at work with their voices as raspy as mine is right about now. But I think more important of what that showed to me, and people said, wow, look what, you know, this is, that these people can vote for this black man. I think it showed a lot of black people something that we just didn't think was possible, and showed a side of America that we just didn't think could be there. And I thought that that just did so much for me and for so many other black people that were there.
Charles, that's great, my comment. Great, great call. I want to put you on hold for a minute and see if you'll give your Kenyan girlfriend's phone number to our producers. But what a fabulous call. And it's up to every one of us, the 75% white crowd out there, the rest of the crowd out there, and everyone to work together, as President Obama was saying in that speech, to make the unity real, to pay it off over the long run, to put our hands together for the sake of America, if we're not just living in a dreamy bubble right now in this moment. WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein is here now with Washington Post editorial board member Jonathan Capehart. Jonathan, how about that call?
It was pretty amazing, and it's nice to hear that the celebrating that was happening here in Washington was going on. Certainly in New York I had heard, but probably all over the country. I left the office at about a little bit after 11, and there were people, and I live on 16th Street, which most people know leads down to the White House, and people were coming from everywhere. Horns were honking. People were cheering, literally dancing in the streets. People hanging out of their cars, giving high fives to just people they probably didn't even know. And it went on well past 2 in the morning. And I only got 3.5 hours of sleep because I had to get up and do Morning Joe, which means I get up at 4.
Right. So, we've all got up.
It was a great. My eyes hurt from crying and lack of sleep, but it feels great.
And we've all got our political hangovers this morning. Certainly everybody in this conversation. But somehow you slipped in a blog post there this morning, Jonathan, that you went home crying last night. Quote: "Because this election vindicates my view of my country."
Yeah, I mean, something the caller said made me blurt out something that wasn't terribly nice. It was when he said that, you know, when he saw the folks, the well-to-do white folks who had moved into his neighborhood, and how, though it was wonderful to see them cheering the election of the first black president, how that gave him a view that, you know, about the possibility of America. I can't remember exactly what he said, and I'm sorry about that. But I have always seen and felt that what we saw last night was possible, that it has always been there. This was the opportunity for it to come out. America is a terrific country, and as I put in the piece, you know, it's a generous nation. A generous nation with a complicated history whose people always find a way to make things right. And that's always been my view of the country, and last night it proved it.
Now, not everybody in Fort Greene is suddenly going to feel all warm and fuzzy about gentrification, but
right.
WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein.
Well, I would argue that, in fact, Barack Obama changed this country. I've watched it change before my eyes, especially in these last weeks since the conventions. And he did it by sort of, you know, being absolutely consistent and rock solid and arguing his point and arguing his agenda and doing it in this incredibly disciplined way, to the point where I found people who couldn't believe that they were going to vote for a black man, who never thought that they would see the day when they would make that choice, realizing in front of me that that's exactly what they were going to do. So I think that he actually didn't just bring out his voters, which is usually what happens in a race like this, but he actually got people to change their minds and rethink their positions on race. Now, by which I don't mean to say that, you know, there's no racism in America and it's finished. I think that the country has moved significantly. The ball has moved significantly down the field in this election.
Now, guess what? We have Charles's girlfriend in Kenya on the phone. Melanie, she is American. She's in Kenya right now in Kukuya, about a half hour from Nairobi. Melanie, thanks so much for taking our call.
You're welcome. No problem.
So what's it like in Kukuya on the day after the son of a Kenyan was elected president of the United States?
You know, it's actually quite amazing. We didn't go to sleep last night. We stayed up the entire night because Kenya is 8 hours ahead of the East Coast. So we stayed up the entire night to watch the campaign and the numbers coming in. And then very early this morning, we obviously saw Barack and his speech. And the Kenyans are just absolutely overwhelmed at this point. Everywhere we go, yesterday we had some Barack T-shirts that were made in Brooklyn by a student of Pratt University. And so we handed them out to a number of people that we were with. And all day yesterday, we were walking around with them. And, you know, everywhere we went, people were just screaming Barack Obama, and there's a song they're playing on the radio that says, like, Barack Obama, Barack Obama, and it's a song, and it was playing all over the place. And in fact, today, President Kibaki announced that tomorrow will be a national holiday, so no one in Kenya will have to go to work or school. And so the Kenyans are just very excited at this point.
National holiday? No work, no school today?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Unbelievable. We thought we had a political hangover.
I told them, how do the Americans have to go to work and school tomorrow? And we have a new president, and they have off tomorrow.
That's right. Maybe only Kenyans can afford to get the day off tomorrow. I don't know.
In fact, what we did was we walked around and interviewed people yesterday, asking them if they could vote who they would vote for. And if so, why would they vote for that person? And all the people we interviewed, we only found one person who said that he would vote for McCain. Everyone else said he would vote for Barack Obama.
Yeah. Well,
they had all different reasons.
You were in Kenya, and there were, 45% plus who voted for McCain in this country, and that's going to be, some of the work that Obama has cut out from. I understand you have someone else there for us to talk to. Is that correct?
I do, in fact. I have a local Kenyan, if you'd like to speak with him.
I'd love to.
Sure, hold on 1 second. Dan.
So Melanie is putting James on the phone. James, this is Brian Lehrer. We're on the radio in New York City. Who are you?
Oh, I'm James.
What do you do?
I'm a volunteer teacher at Compass School in Kenya.
Uh-huh. And how do you feel about Barack Obama being elected President of the United States?
Wow, I feel great. It was such fun yesterday. We were celebrating and screaming all over. In fact, we didn't sleep yesterday night. And today, guys, I just falling off the seats as we walk. We are sleepwalking, in fact.
So how do Kenyans party?
Kenyans, we usually have some music. We dance to local music, and there are guys who take some local brew and they get drunk maybe all night. Some just go to church and pray.
Now, you know that song that Melanie just said was on the radio over there? We've got it. Tell us if this is the same music you're listening to. James, what?
That is the same song, in fact. And guys were dancing to that song like crazy.
Good, the boys and the girls. James, would it mean anything to Kenya? Is this just happiness to see a descendant of a Kenyan elected president, or might it mean something for your country?
Actually, it means a lot. Since guys are taking like Obama to be, he's one of us. And his forefathers come from Kenya. And basically, the better part is that he's a young person, he's energetic. He knows what it takes to be a leader. And we are hoping that he do the best for the world, not just Kenya.
James, thanks for coming on the phone with us. Please thank Melanie for us. James and Melanie in Kukuyu, Kenya, thank you very, very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you, too.
And WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein back here across the ocean in our small world.
And speaking of hangovers, I mean, I do think that amidst all of this celebration, amidst all of this, history, there were some 50-odd million people who did not vote for Barack Obama. And some of them are no doubt extremely upset today. I mean, this was a campaign in which some people voted for McCain because they liked his experience, they liked his war record, and quite frankly, some people voted for McCain because they were scared of Barack Obama. As a matter of fact, they seemed to be at the McCain victory speech last night, where he was booed when he mentioned Barack Obama. And he sort of, began to try to turn that around by saying, he was a worthy opponent and now he is my president. Which was similar to what we just heard President Bush say. But clearly, there is discontent out there. It was sown during this very hard-fought campaign, and there's going to be, some healing to do and some real work for both Republicans and Democrats. A challenge
Indeed.
For McCain to put his money where his mouth is on this issue of bipartisanship to really sort of try to live that now.
Jonathan Capehart?
Brian, I thought that Senator McCain actually took a great step forward with his concession speech last night. Throughout this entire campaign, that John McCain that I think a lot of people admired back in 2000 finally reemerged. one of conciliation, and it was terrific that he recognized and articulated to those people in that ballroom just how important Senator Obama, now President-elect Obama's election is. And also, I think one thing that was a disservice to the people in that ballroom, they turned off media reports and were actively only reporting the states that Senator Obama won. Dana Milbank in the paper today was there and chronicled when the rest of the nation knew that Barack Obama had 200-and-something electoral votes won. They were reporting Senator McCain ahead by, I think it was like 57-something.
So what was that about? Was it like you can't handle the truth?
Possibly, but, you know, what? If you allow the information to come through over time, it gives people the space they need to come to grips with the fact that their candidate, who they worked very hard for, is not going to win. But, you know, Andrea raises a very good point. There are lots of 55 million people who voted for Senator McCain for one reason or another, and it's going to be incumbent upon President-elect Obama, when he officially becomes president, to reach across the aisle and to work with Republicans and to bring those people over who are afraid of him, bring them over to show that he is indeed their president, too, and has their interests at heart.
Absolutely. And, of course, we will be talking to Republicans on this show about what they expect of President-elect Obama if he's serious about keeping his word on that score. We have to go to a break soon, but, Andrea, there is some news already this morning. Illinois Congressman Rahm Emanuel apparently being offered the job of White House Chief of Staff. He's a Clinton guy, isn't he?
It's amazing. It just shows you the fine line that Obama has been able to carry and carry off with aplomb. He ran against the Clintons, and he's picked a Clinton White House insider, a Washington insider, to run his government. But yet, he's not repeating mistakes that both Bush and Clinton made, which is they came in as outsiders, and then they tried to run government as an outsider. And Obama is picking somebody who knows how to work with Congress to help get through this very big agenda that
Jonathan,
he has.
Jonathan, what was Rahm Emanuel's position in the Clinton White House?
Oh, gosh, you're putting me on
the
spot.
There was something similar, right? I mean, he was a big political advisor.
Yeah,
or
he was, I think, somewhere in the domestic policy shop.
So but quick reaction to Rahm Emanuel as chief of staff?
I think it's a bold, smart move. From what I understand, Rahm Emanuel, while he's known as a Democratic Party partisan, he actually has deep personal relationships with Republicans on Capitol Hill, which after more than, you know, possibly two decades of fierce partisanship where, you know, the old days of Democrats and Republicans, you know, doing battle on the Hill during the day and going out to dinner with each other at night seems to take on the you know, legend of myth. He actually has those relationships, which are going to be extremely important to President Obama.
Sounds like a good start, then. We'll see if he can pull it off. Jonathan Capehart, Washington Post editorial writer in D.C., has a great post on WashingtonPost.com on the political blog this morning. Jonathan, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
And we continue with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, and we'll bring in Mark Blumenthal from Pollster.com and drill down on some of these fascinating results and exit poll numbers.
Oh, yeah. It is not Hillary Clinton,
Obama,
and it is not John McCain,
Obama,
it is not Chuck Norris,
Obama,
and I know it's not John Wayne,
Obama,
it is not the one Rambo,
Obama,
and it is not the Terminator,
Obama,
but are the new trendsetter,
Obama,
he matting up the whole America, and they mash out of Barack Obama, Barack Obama.
Watching tonight from beyond our shores, from parliaments and palaces, to those who are huddled around radios in the forgotten corners of the world, our stories are singular, but our destiny is shared. And a new dawn of American leadership is at hand. To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you. To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
There are so many results, so many numbers to crunch. Let's crunch them with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and Mark Blumenthal now, editor and publisher of Pollster.com. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning.
Andrea, a quarter of New York wants to know the Jewish vote.
78% for Barack Obama. That is more than John Kerry got. He got 74%. Al Gore got 79%. I think the big story of this election is that the Jews came home to the Democratic Party and the Latinos moved over to the Democratic Party in big numbers, both of them voting overwhelmingly for Barack Obama.
The big schlep, Sarah Silverman's video. It worked.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of factors. I mean, one of the things about, certainly about Florida is, you know, when you go to these counties like Palm Beach County, very important county with a lot of Jews, and they were subject to this huge advertising campaign against McCain's health care plan. So in the end, if there were these whispering campaigns, at one point Obama was only getting 60% of the support of Jews, way, way, way below what Democrats usually do. But in the end, like everybody else, and like white voters across the country, Jews turned out to vote on these concrete pocketbook issues.
Mark, anything else on the Jewish vote before we move on?
Well, I'll say two things. One, I just want to amplify that point about Florida. It's worth noting there have been a lot of stories about how the Obama campaign outspent the McCain campaign. They certainly did. But in Florida, particularly up until the last two or three weeks, that gulf was immense. I mean, the Obama campaign made a huge commitment and advertised starting in the summer. And so they most of us looked at that decision back in the summer and the relative positions of the candidates at the time, and we thought they were a little crazy because Florida looked like such a difficult target. And yet they used that money advantage there more than almost, I think, anywhere else to change the map.
It wasn't all the Sarah Silverman fans calling their boobies and Zadies?
Well, you know, the other thing is Sarah Palin. You know, I this will be for...
Forget about her.
Well, you know, John McCain made a choice there.
That's Italian, isn't it?
He revved up his base, but I think with Jewish voters in particular, there was, I think she was a hurt. I mean, I think it made McCain look conservative in a way on social conservative issues that a lot of Jewish voters were uncomfortable with.
Mark Blumenthal from Pollster.com. I'm going to give you carte blanche here. We all know the big result. Tell us something, anything that's surprising you as you drill down on the voting in the exit polls this morning.
Well, I'll be honest that I've spent most of the last 7 hours or so sleeping, but...
You're the only one in the entire political class.
I just collapsed at about 2 a.m. But I have taken a look at how every morning I was looking at our trend estimates for every state, which are based on all the polls in each state, and watching them carefully. And it is really amazing. How, particularly in states that were heavily polled, Virginia, Ohio, Florida, Missouri, North Carolina, the sort of averages of all the polls were within a point or two of the result.
No Bradley effect.
No, really. Certainly not in Ohio. If anything, there was, you know, Obama outperformed the final polls in Pennsylvania, which is one place that I think the McCain campaign was winking and implying that they thought there would be a hidden undecided vote, but certainly not. You know, there are, if you look at smaller, states where there were fewer surveys done of, you know, iffier quality in some cases, perhaps North Dakota, maybe New Mexico, there were some surprises, but they weren't, you know, they were in both directions. They were pretty much random.
Mark, I'm wondering, you know, I know that there was all of this sort of hand-wringing after the New Hampshire primaries when people said,
right,
oh, the polls were wrong, the polls were wrong, the polls were wrong. But I'm wondering if sort of looking back, I mean, my sense of the primaries is they were extremely volatile and people felt like Obama, Hillary Clinton, the stakes weren't so high, but that maybe not so much in the general election.
Well, there are a number of good reasons why polls would do really well in a general election like this and would have a very tough time in something like the Clinton-Obama race. One reason is we had a huge turnout yesterday. So I don't know what the numbers will turn out to. I haven't seen anyone do the percentage yet, but it's at least probably two-thirds of adults. Whereas in a primary, a Democratic primary, a huge turnout was 25 or 30. So pollsters had a much bigger task to try to identify what a likely voter was in a primary. Second, in the New Hampshire primary, there were, according to the final polls and the exit polls, there were three candidates, Clinton, Obama, and John Edwards, who had favorable ratings in over 80%. So voters there came in basically happy with all three. You know, that was a really tough choice for a lot of Democrats. And so I think there was very real volatility in that primary. I don't think there was much volatility in the last week.
Hey, I've got
virtually
a few.
All voters had their minds made up.
First-time voters, only 11% of the electorate, not historically high. Black voters, 13% of the electorate, just slightly up from 11% are the numbers I've seen. Hardly the spike we were hearing about in some of the early voting. And the under 30 vote, I don't have the number, I heard Juan Williams say on NPR this morning, not as big as the Obama people hoped. Am I reading those right?
Well, that was the way they looked last night. It's worth remembering that these exit polls will get, I think, weighted again to try to make sure they're as close a match to the actual electorate as possible in terms of the outcome. But it's not, you know, not all that surprising in the sense that the turnout was just higher everywhere. I'm a little, I want to see the numbers by age looked at more closely.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that national exit poll may have lacked, I'm just not sure, are phone interviews among early voters. You know, they didn't, you can't interview somebody who voted early as they come outside the polling place. So in about 18 states, the exit pollsters did phone surveys to try to get at early votes. But that means they didn't do it in a whole lot of other states.
Andrea, taxes, such a big issue down the stretch. 7 in 10 said they thought Obama would raise their taxes. 6 in 10 thought McCain would raise their taxes. Obama carried all income groups, according to the exit polls, except 100 to 150,000.
I think what's very interesting is that, you know, we've been talking today about, you know, lowering expectations for Obama. And in some ways, voters don't have really great expectations. You know, I've heard a lot of, you know, we're in such a hole if he can just begin to dig us out a little bit. But clearly, you know, people thought, yes, everyone's going to raise taxes. Nobody has a really great plan on the economy. I'm just going for the sort of person, in a sense, that makes me feel better and, you know, that I think is more trustworthy, more stable, and is going to figure this thing out. So it doesn't surprise me that people think that. And, you know, another sort of interesting fact is if you present people, it just sort of shows how you ask the question. If you say, you know, what's the most important issue, and someone says taxes, that person usually sort of was somebody that would think Obama was going to raise their taxes. If they said the economy, it was somebody who didn't like Bush and was going to vote McCain.
Listeners, we have a time capsule question that we will dredge up in 2012 and see how close you came. It's on our webpage. Participate in this. What will President Obama actually change by 2012? Post your answers to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. You'll see the time capsule page. Here's one that's come in. By 2012, there will be greater transportation infrastructure and a form of universal health care. Hope springs eternal for that person. Someone else wrote, by 2012, a new female pro-choice Supreme Court justice. No names attached to that. And Mark Blumenthal from pollster.com, what about the total white vote compared to other Democratic presidential candidates? Did you see it? The numbers that I saw were pretty consistent with other Democratic candidates.
Right, and that in itself is sort of a victory for all of the sort of hand-wringing over the last few months about how Barack Obama was going to be at a disadvantage. One thing he did, which I think did stand out from the exit polls, was that, I should double-check this morning, but as of last night, he was getting 49% of the votes of college-educated white voters. That is 5 points higher than John Kerry, and that number had been between 40 and 45% for the last four presidential elections.
And I think, as a matter of fact, when the results were sort of pushed a little bit this morning, Barack Obama turns out to have gotten the highest percentage of white voters in a two-man race since Jimmy Carter, so since 1976,
yeah.
Got a higher percentage than John Kerry or Al Gore, which is astounding.
Yeah, actually, I just pulled it up, and the number's a little lower. It's 47% among white college graduates, but that's still a higher number. So what there is a change underneath. While the overall number is what it is. He did much better among better educated white voters, which we've been seeing all along in the primaries and throughout, and that helped move his margin up.
Another prediction from our site: by 2012, Obama will move the grid into the 21st century and set the groundwork to harness sustainable energy for the future. More hopes, more dreams. How much will he be able to pay off? Andrea, 45 seconds on some issues. The exit poll showed, speaking of energy, two-thirds favor new offshore oil drilling, and more than half oppose the $700 billion bailout. Does President Obama have to govern with or against those numbers?
I think he has to tinker with the bailout to make it look like the banks are not just running away with the money. And I think that he's already opened the door for himself on offshore drilling. So I'd be surprised if we don't see some movement in that direction as part of a comprehensive energy package. My prediction for 2012, more puppies in the White House.
WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, Mark Blumenthal, producer and editor of Pollster.com. From our website, are black people still entitled to their anger? Does pride that one of their own has achieved so much, including accolades and acceptance from white people, actually change anything in day-to-day life? Our day after coverage continues.